and we just appreciate the day Peter. Because I'm sure in many meetings and then he has never prioritized this committee for quite a good number of days. In succession as well. And other than that, I think we should be, let me first just check whether we have got the same document in our hands. Are we having a copy of the Government Gazette 19544, the one that talks to the Principal Act? Principal Act of the Refugees Act. Honorable members, are you having copies of that? I'm sure you know by now, I think we've talked about this issue for quite a long time. We are not worried about the rest of the Act. I think we are only worried about Section 21.5. Only 21.5. Right at the end of Section 21. That is what we'll be talking to, but we have just simply made sure that you get the whole copy, because in any way that is almost your term of reference or part of your terms of reference in this particular committee. And then also you're supposed to be having what that is the committee, the Refugees Amendment Bill, B2015. Are we having that copy as well? Our proposed amendment of that Section 21.5. Are we okay? Can somebody help Honorable Hussein to find that particular document? Oh, okay. Okay. Thank you very much. And then at the back of it, then it has got the memorandum that explains exactly what happens in this bill as it is required. Ordinarily, that's what has to happen with any amendment bill or any bill that's introduced, that must be supported by the memorandum that explains certain few things. Then the last thing, if ever it is the last thing, it is the court order, the constitutional court order. The document that starts with a page with an emblem that is black and white, that is not a knight emblem. It's not a knight emblem for sure. One of the ugliest in front of me. That's the Constitutional Court judgment, KCCT 136/12 of 2013. In that document, you will do, I think we will be looking at that wording that we should read instead of the current 21.5 in the Principal Act that actually informs the amendment that we will be busy with. Then it is, other than that, it is two sets of minutes of the 19th of May. I just hope that we are not repeating this. And minutes of the 26th of May that we'll be dealing with. Like as I've indicated, that we'll also be dealing with a third term program. I think you should be having a one pager in your hand. Titled Draft Program of the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs, Third Term Program 2015, envisaged to start from the 21st of July to 23rd of September. Are we also having that copy? Okay. There is nothing that stops us from proceeding now to item number 3 of the agenda, and then we can invite the Parliamentary Legal Advisor and then to deal with the bill now that we have received the permission from the House to proceed with the committee bill. What next? And what is the sequence? And then when are we starting it? But I want it to be started as early as possible, as early as today. The car must start moving. And we'll hear from the legal advisor. And what is there that we need to do? And how are we going to do it? And then also look at the draft bill. Then we eventually must agree on the draft bill. That must be either advertised or introduced. And yeah, can you take us legal advisor, Hassan? I hope I've pronounced it properly. Thank you very much. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, honorable members and members of the public. As the chairperson has mentioned, there's a process that needs to be followed once the House has given permission for the committee to proceed with the legislative proposal. The rules that will kick in are rules 239, 240, and 241 of the National Assembly rules. Basically, what these rules state is that once the Assembly gives permission that the proposal be proceeded with, the committee must prepare a draft bill and a memorandum setting out the object of the bill, must then consult the JTM for advice on the classification of the bill, and this can only be done after this committee agrees in principle to what the draft legislation should provide, and then also comply with Rule 241. Now, Rule 241 is the advertisement or the publication of the draft bill together with the memo in the Government Gazette, and that is largely to give prior notice of your intention to introduce a bill in the National Assembly once the committee agrees on the draft version. The purpose of the publication in the Gazette would also be to allow interested persons and institutions to comment on the bill. In terms of Rule 240, at least 3 weeks must be given for that publication process and consultation process to happen. So should a bill be agreed to in principle today, the steps would be that it must be published together with the memo in a gazette, and an invitation must be accompanied to that bill and memo, inviting persons of interest as well as institutions to comment on the bill. Now, I'm going to go into the content of the proposed committee bill. I know you do have hard copies with you, but for ease of reference, I've also put it up on the screen. Basically, the proposed content is that it would start off with a long title, which basically sets out what the bill intends to do, which in very short terms is to amend the Refugees Act in line with the cheaper judgment that was delivered in September 2013, to confer discretion upon the Refugee Appeals Authority. Now, you'll note I mentioned Refugee Appeals Authority and not the board, but I'm going to go into the reasons for that later. And the discretion will be to allow the public and the media access to its proceedings in appropriate cases. If you move on, Clause 1 then is really the substance of this bill. It's the clause that amends Section 21(5) of the Principal Act. Now, you will see that the heading reads Amendment of Section 21 of Act 130, which is the Principal Act, as amended by Section 13 of Act 33 of 2008. Now, Act 33 of 2008 is an amendment act to the Refugees Act that was passed by Parliament but not yet brought into operation. And the reason why the heading is crafted in that way is that any amendments must be referred to when amending a particular section in any subsequent amendment act. And this is in line with drafting practices and conventions. What Clause 1 does is basically incorporate the reading in provision that was provided for in the cheaper judgment. So if you look at this section, the first part of it, which is not underlined, is Section 21(5) as it currently is in the Principal Act. All the underlined sections are the leading in provisions that was provided for in the Chiefer judgment. And that is how this particular section is being applied at the moment by the Refugee Board. There is, however, one difference. The difference is that if you compare this provision to the Constitutional Court's read-in provision, you will see in the Constitutional Court's read-in provision, reference is made to the Refugee Appeal Board. In this Amendment Act, however, we refer to the Refugee Appeals Authority. The reason for that is that in 2008, the Refugee Amendment Act 33 of 2008 was passed by Parliament, and it was assented to by the President on the 21st of November 2008, but that act has never been brought into operation. But what that act does is that it does dissolve the Refugee Appeal Board and instead establishes the Refugee Appeals Authority. Therefore, all subsequent amendments that are drafted, even though that Amendment Act is not yet in operation, must be aligned to the wording of the Amendment Act. Therefore, the words here in our Amendment Bill refers to the Refugee Appeals Authority and not the Refugee Appeal Board. Clause 2, then, is what we call a transitional provision. It merely addresses the fact that the Amendment Act of 2008 establishes the Refugee Appeals Authority. Therefore, Clause 2 states that the reference to Refugee Appeals Authority in Section 21(5) of the Principal Act, which is amended by this Act, must be construed as a reference to the Refugee Appeal Board as provided for in the Principal Act until such time that Section 11 of the Refugees Amendment Act comes into operation. Now, the reason reference is made to Section 11, it is because that is the particular section of the Amendment Act that actually establishes the Refugee Appeals Authority. Then finally, what we have is the short title and commencement. The short title would basically read that this is the Refugee Amendment Act 2015, and that the commencement date would be the 27th of September 2015. The reason why we have 27 September 2015 is because the judgment or the order made in the Chiefer judgment expires on the 26th of September 2015. So in order to avoid any gap in the law, we would make this particular act operational as from the 27th of September 2015. Now, as I said before, the rules require any act to be accompanied by the memorandum on the objectives of the act. We have prepared a memo over there. The first part, which is the introduction, basically just sets the background to this Amendment Act by referring to the Chiefer judgment, by referring to what was said in the Chiefer judgment, by also stating that the declaration of invalidity that was made in the Chiefer judgment was suspended for 2 years, and then also particularly stating when that 2 year period would end. The objects of the bill are basically to address the Constitutional Court judgment, and the objects are then to amend Section 21(5) of the Principal Act in line with the Chiefer judgment. The content of the bill goes to each of the clauses, and I'm not going to repeat what I said earlier, but it's basically Clause 1 is the substantive amendment to Section 21(5), which incorporates the reading in the Constitutional Court judgment, except for the reference to Refugee Appeals Authority instead of the Board. Clause 2 is the one that deals with the transitional provision, and Clause 3 is your short title and commencement date. Part of what must be also put in the memo is any organizational and personnel implications. We have said none there because at present, this is how this provision is being currently implemented by the Refugee Appeal Board, and I don't think that this act will then require any extra staff or personnel to be employed to give effect to it. The same goes for the financial implications. In terms of the departments and bodies consulted, a draft of this was given to the Department of Home Affairs, and they are here today as well. So they have been consulted on the contents of the draft. Under 7, we just make it clear that should this bill not come into operation on 27 September, there would be a gap in the law, and this is about giving effect to the Chiefer judgment. And then finally, we propose that this be a Section 75 bill, and that would be the procedure that then this bill would undertake in the parliamentary process. Thank you.
Just before we come off from your presentation, what is the implication in relation to the NCOP? How does the NCOP come into the picture? And what extent do they come into the picture, if any? If you have tried to think about it.
Mr. Chair, all bills, whether they're Section 75 or 76, will go to the NCOP. We would suppose that this bill be classified as a Section 75 bill, which means that once adopted, it will still go to the NCOP. The voting, however, in the NCOP will be different, whereas on a Section 76 bill, each province will come with a mandate in terms of voting on the bill. In this instance, each individual in the NCOP will vote, but it would still have to go to the NCOP. The NCOP would still be briefed on this bill. Should they want to even call for comment, they are at liberty to do so in terms of the Constitution. But in terms of process, they won't need the six-week process that they normally follow when it's a 76 bill.
Okay. Now, if they want to need the six-week cycle, I think then that would actually make our life a little bit easier. Honorable members, there we are. We are just simply correcting a technicality on the bill, and we are just simply taking exactly what the Constitutional Court has actually indicated to us, that is what should happen in the two-year period that is expiring on the 26th of September. And then we have actually now put that particular section into the amendment bill so that it doesn't anymore function as a lead-in wedding, and then it becomes part of the piece of legislation. And then the memorandum, I think we have gone through, and then just a repetition, I think we have been going through that in terms of what we are trying to do to correct the constitutional glitch that we have on the Act. And of course, there is that consequential amendment in relation to the Refugee Appeals Authority, because of the previous amendment that has been done. That is just a consequential one. Are we together? And then, if we are together, then let me just hear if there are any comments. Otherwise, a hand that says we agree on the amendment bill to be our draft bill that must be introduced and advertised with the memorandum. And then we'll be off this thing and get to the next item. Honorable Maxson.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to get a clarity. When the legal advisor was presenting, she talked about 3 weeks, the publication process and consultation process. So I just want to get a clarity on that one. How do you go about it? One. Second, when she talks, she tells us that the Act never been brought to operation. What does it mean? Which Act? Why it never brought to operation? Just the small clarity.
The question is not in line with this one. Okay. Come in. Yes, proceed.
Chair, I'm satisfied overall. I think this is important. It needs to be done and let's do it quickly. I'd just like just have one query, please, and it relates to what is that number? Six. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Figure six.
Yeah, it's actually B and six. Now, if you read that, it says, under 6, it says, whether allowing any person or the media access to its proceedings or allowing the media to report thereon. That part that I'm querying, the part of the word or allowing the media to report thereon. By implication, it suggests that the appeals board can prevent the media from reporting on it. And I would argue that the appeals authority can't do that. It can, of course, determine whether or not they can allow the media access to the proceedings. But I don't think that they can allow, they can prevent the media from reporting on it. Because the media can report on it whether or not they have access to the specific proceedings.
Okay. I think that one, we hear you, but the time for that debate is still coming. At the moment, now we just need a draft bill to be introduced. And then we sit input, and then we come, and then we debate. Then we reach certain conclusions. If we agree, we just convince or convince each other. At the moment, can you respond to Honorable Maxson's... Let's get the reply to these two questions, then I'll come back to you, Honorable Ngoma, and you may proceed.
The question about the three-week requirement is actually in Rule 240, National Assembly Rule 240, A. It says that before introducing its bill, the committee must arrange its business in such a manner that interested persons and institutions have a period of at least 3 weeks after the draft bill or particulars of the bill have been published in terms of Rule 241. Now, the publication in Rule 241 is a publication in the Gazette. The manner in which it plays out in practice is that should this draft bill be agreed to today, this bill, together with the memo, will be sent to Government Gazette printers. Together with that will be an invitation that calls on interested persons and institutions to comment, and a date of within 3 weeks and more can be given. The way I read this rule is that no less than 3 weeks should be given, but one can give more than 3 weeks. With regard to the Amendment Act that I've mentioned has been assented to but not yet in operation, in 2008 and in 2011, the Principal Act was amended. Both those Amendment Acts were signed by the President, but they were never brought in operation. So as we speak, they're on our statute books, but they're not being implemented at the moment. But in terms of drafting conventions, any subsequent draft must be drafted in a manner as if those two Amendment Acts are already there. That's why we refer to the Appeals Authority and not the Appeal Board.
Can I give Honorable Ngoma an opportunity and followed by Kumed, and then I'll come to Honorable Hussein? In that order. It's on the wall. There is microphone and an on and off left button.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much, Chairperson. There's such a lot of guidance here, one gets to see. But thank you. Chairperson, I would have asked the question which Honorable Hussein asked, which was the question on 5B. I'm not too sure if the way the chairperson answered it, it actually captures all, and that is the issue to allow any person of the media to attend the report. I think the chairperson said we'll be debating that. I think in our debate we need more information so that we can actually address the matter, because there's nothing stopping us today from stating that this bill needs to go forth. But then if there are just some slight glitches or some slight input we need on certain areas, then we need that. Secondly, Chairperson, I do note that there's this matter on the very last page, on the 6.6 on the last page, where department bodies or persons consulted, the following stakeholders were consulted. Stakeholders, and then we have one stakeholder, which is the Department of Home Affairs. Were there other stakeholders that were consulted, or probably they do appear in other documentation, these other stakeholders? And thirdly, the issue of the point on 8.2, where the committee has stated that we do not need to refer this bill to the National House of Traditional Leaders. I really feel that they are necessary stakeholders, and even if the bill does not contain any customary law or customary traditional practices, it is actually proper to list them. I'm not sure if we did or if we got an input or if we're still going to include them, because I think as a country, South Africa has got our traditional leaders and our traditional laws, so it's proper that it goes forth. But if we do have any consultation that was done, Chairperson, then it would be fine by me. Thanks.
Okay, so Honorable Gumede.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Firstly, let me apologize for coming late, Honorable Chairperson. I'm trying to attend two meetings at the same time. The other one is still continuing, the other side. And when I finish there, they are run that to the next meeting. But I'm
maybe you should get a chainsaw.
Yeah.
And start right
cut off. Yeah, and then secondly, I think the point made by Honorable Hussein is a point to be looked at. But when we sat and looked at the amendments, we felt that sticking to the exact wording of the judgment provided much more certainty than if we were going to try and alter the wording of the judge. So, and secondly, we looked at the situation that there are other amendments that will be coming. And then after those amendments, we will take then the judgment into account and then try and alter whatever we wanted to alter, given that opportunity. So that is the reason that I would support sticking to the wording of the judge, and in the meantime, until we look at the bigger picture, which is going to come with other amendments in the Refugee Amendment Act. With those words, I think I support the wording as it stands. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, honorable members. I think that was the spirit to say is that the wording of the judgment will provide us with the basic draft bill for us to be able to take it out there and then solicit inputs from the public and interested parties. At the moment, I think one question that came from Honorable Nkong was that, yes, we have consulted the department as an executive, but then today's draft bill that we agree on will help us now to solicit input from all other stakeholders. Of course, in relation to the traditional leaders, I think that there are other provisions, I'm sure, in the Constitution that actually dictate which piece of legislation must find its way to the traditional leadership. And then the others, it is not necessary. And then, but I mean, there is nothing that stops when this particular bill is advertised, there is nothing that stops anybody in the country to make a comment like as it's advertised in the government gazette. Anybody that thinks has got interest can make an input, send them to ourselves, and when we consider those inputs, and then we may find ourselves making or agreeing to make some other final amendments to the draft bill before we pass it, or for some other reason we may end up agreeing that we don't need to make any other amendments depending on the discussions that we'll be having and the input that we'll have received from the general public and the other institutions that may be having some sort of input. Honorable members, what we have, or just before I actually go forward, I think there was another question. Have they been clear to all of us? No, I mean the ones that was raised by Honorable Nkong. Because I just responded to the traditional leadership and the question of soliciting stakeholders, that we're still going to go there. Yeah. Are your questions, have they responded to all of them?
Yes, Chairperson. The first one was the question that was similar
okay.
to the one that
all
was
right.
Yeah, I'm happy to keep the argument for a later stage.
Yeah.
I mean, I take the point that it's, as the judgment has been, I mean, the words come out from the judgment, but the implication is fully and something that we must consider at that point. I mean, the fact that this will come before us for us to agree as a committee to publish it, I'm sure gives us the authority to make amendments to it before it's been published. But having said that, I'm happy to withdraw the suggestion for now, and we'll deal with it when we're dealing with the bill at a later stage.
Okay. All right. I wanted to indicate that we have invited, I think, the legal gurus in the Department of Home Affairs. I think it must be the two, because they are the two faces that I can't, that I'm not used to now. I think you have heard the presentation from the parliamentary legal advisor. Is there any comment that you want to make?
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members, I think at this stage we will not be making any comments, perhaps to await the publication. But we have been, just to confirm, we've been in discussions with our colleague here, the parliamentary legal advice. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And then, of course, after we have received the input, and then that's the time that you will be coming again, and then we'll be discussing all of us and agreeing on the final product. So, honorable members, we've got a draft bill and the memorandum that seeks to explain what we are trying to do with this bill. And if there is anybody that is happy that this is now our draft bill for publication, then I'll see by show of hand. Is there anyone that wants to move for agreement on this bill to be our bill, draft bill, so that there's clarity to not find ourselves doing a wrong thing? Honorable Hussein?
I'm happy to move. Thank you.
Honorable Hussein is moving. Honorable Nancy?
I support. I second.
Okay, then you just seconded, and then now is draft bill and the memorandum now are our documents that will kickstart the whole process. And of course, I'm aware of a draft advert that needed to be penal vetted. It is in English, and then it is in Zulu, and then in Sotho. I requested that those kind of translations to be made to ensure that we are reaching almost all the people. And because, of course, is that if honorable members want to suggest any other thing, especially in relation to this advert, but all what is happening is that there will be some implications to the extent of doing the advert. The belief was that the three adverts, we may all be able to read and understand what is required. Unless if somebody says no, publish that advert in all the languages. But of course then there will be some sort of implication. Yes, I'm listening to honorable members. Because the advert is just simply to solicit input from people, and then it's just simply indicating the bill and what the bill seeks to do, and then from there then it just indicates where they should send those input, and then an address to, of course, is to Parliament, and then to the committee secretary, and then Honorable Ngong.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm addressing the matter of the address. I would understand if we were to go for the three languages, if the taxes that are collected, which are used for payments of the adverts, were coming from the three languages only. Now the taxes come from all languages, come from all the people of the Republic. So I would definitely like us to consider. the people of our country, all of them who are taxpayers, are actually benefiting. We do understand that Zulu, Xhosa, I think in Ndebele and whatever, they Swazi, they can more or less understand the same document, but we also need to debate it. But let's not forget, the money comes from everybody else, so nobody needs to be excluded. Thank you.
Okay, we have heard this. What is the norm? What is sometimes the norm? Not necessarily that it is a rule cut in stone, but you know, for similar bills that go through parliament, and then what is usually done when it comes to advert?
I think I'm going to ask Eddie to answer this here in terms of process.
Yes.
But, just
but I mean,
say,
if you don't have answers, it's not a problem. We'll just simply go back to the committee session, and then bills have been going through this this parliament, and then the committee session should be clear on this particular matter, Eddie. Yes.
Currently, there's no norm, and then what I can do in the meantime is to have the bill translated in all the languages and try to get the code. Then the code will determine as well, because sometimes it can be very expensive.
Yeah, well, let's see what is going to happen. I do understand the position of Honorable Nkong. Ideally, that is what is required to be done. But of course, is that certain things, reasonability must come in. And then when you do certain things, and then to be able to be efficient and sometimes economic, because our constitution as well expects everybody else to spend the public purse in the most efficient manner. And so there is that expectation from the Constitution when it comes to public funds. So that's why we're just simply talking to reasonability, that you talk about the Nguni languages and expect that these languages, they can read this and understand, these languages, they can read this and understand. But I think we'll make some further inquiries, Honorable Members, and then we will make the determination, and in line with what happens in terms of the parliamentary processes on this particular matter. Can I then take for granted that we have dealt with this item, remember? Then now we go to the third term program. We go to the third term program. But I just wanted to make some little announcement as well before that. Is that, Honorable Members, you'll remember that our current program, we provided for this committee to do some oversight activities in housing. And we also thought that we may even go to KZN, where we are going to interact with foreign nationals, and in relation to their interactions with the Department of Home Affairs, what are their worries, and then what is there that the thing can be done better when dealing with issues of migration, refugees, and all that. And now, unfortunately, then we had this outbreak of attacks to foreign nationals. And then Parliament has responded to that by establishing an ad hoc committee to go and inquire into these activities on the ground. And I'm aware of three members of this committee from the African National Congress. I think they have been nominated to serve on that ad hoc committee. I'm not aware of other members from the other political parties who are actually serving on that committee. And therefore, on the 23rd, I think we were supposed to be going to Gauteng for South Africa. And I felt that as a committee we need to discontinue that exercise and give that particular ad hoc committee that particular exercise to do, and then also inquire. Of course, they can't avoid, when they are inquiring the foreign nationals, the impact of Home Affairs. They can't avoid that. And then it looks like it may be some repetition to a certain extent, because what we're going to do is a small part of what this ad hoc committee is supposed to do on that particular subject. And therefore, it's felt that we should discontinue that exercise to Gauteng and let the ad hoc committee and then try to put that particular leg of the foreign nationals in his program and undertake and do both. So, which means is that that particular activity on our current second term program then will not be done, and we will also just await the report of that ad hoc committee and then extract out of it whatever they would have found out on the queries that relate to foreign nationals and whatever on their interaction with the Department of Home Affairs and BFS and all that, and then and try and bring that to our committee for discussion if ever we have to take some further decisions on the input that they would have collected out of their report. Does that make sense, Honorable Members? Honorable Nkomo?
Thank you, Sir President. It does not make sense to me. I would have requested that probably in that ad hoc committee, even if all members of this committee were not part of it, but maybe the chairperson should have been part of it, because some of the issues which will need to be addressed at that particular oversight would be dealt with appropriately if a member of this committee, like maybe the chairperson, would be there. Even the report, which they'll be writing on their own, if they bring it to us, it may have some areas which would have been addressed when the chairperson was there. It's just the ideal position. I'm not sure what processes were followed in setting up this committee, but I think that's what is going to ensure that the matter drags on and on and on. And yet, if maybe even the chairperson was part of that ad hoc committee, we would have addressed some of the matters. Thank you.
Yeah, maybe just simply to try and put some light on it. What I understand is that in the House, I think we agreed on a motion to establish that, of course. And then I'm aware of the three names that come from the ANC, because the ANC has already nominated those members to serve in that committee. But the other parties, I'm not aware whom have been nominated to serve in that particular committee. And therefore, one would have loved that if maybe Honorable Nkomo from the IFP, if they decided to put you in there, they would have made our life easier. Yes, and then in the DA, if they've put any of the two, it would serve us much better. But I mean, it's up to the political parties whom they are deploying in that particular committee. And of course is that we may expect that Honorable Maxson may volunteer himself in there, so that there is that connection, as you are saying. And then, because of course we have interest in there. But like as I'm saying, it is political parties' responsibility to send in names of their members that should serve on that committee in terms of the formula that was agreed in the House. And my party did not forward me. I'm sure its members should remember that there is another parallel process as well of the Rules Committee and the Joint Rules Committee, which I'm serving in, and it has to complete quite a lot of work during this particular period, because we expect that around September the rule book should have been amended and it should be up and running. And therefore, I can't split myself into many pieces like Honorable Gumede may be seeking to do. You know, and but I think we are happy. Honorable Gumede, Honorable Kenya, and Honorable Nisi. I'm aware that the ANC has forwarded them to go and assist us on that particular ad hoc process. Honorable Gumede.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Seeing that perhaps there could be some concerns, I'd suggest that perhaps if somebody wanted to have an input, they would perhaps I'd welcome any input from the members of our committee, because sometimes there could be a different point of emphasis from us. And then I belong to two committees, that is Home Affairs and State Security. So, but if there is Home Affairs concerns, I mean, I'd take them along. Just send me something through my email. It will be welcome.
Yeah. Another thing that we are happy about as well, I think it is the Committee Secretary of Home Affairs, I think he will be it's a co-secretary. Yeah, will be a co-secretary of that ad hoc committee. And therefore, members must feel free. And then Adam is a support staff as well on that ad hoc committee. Yes, and our famous Nandi. So, More or less also that is what actually informed me to really say that let's discontinue the 23rd exercise, because it is going to disrupt their preparations for that ad hoc committee, because it's the same, almost the same crew that will then be organizing that particular trip, and whereas on the one side they are expected to service that ad hoc committee and make programs and logistical arrangements and everything. And therefore, that's why I say I'm confident that because the Secretariat is here, they should be able to ensure that the program of that ad hoc committee include even this particular piece of work that you wanted to do with the foreign nationals in terms of have their interaction with Home Affairs. Then they should be able to put it in there and do that. So, honorable members and some of the members of the public should be able to make submissions to him. If there is anything that you need to influence their work, and then drop an email to Gumede or Mam Kenya or Mam Nis, or make the submission straight to the committee secretary, who will take it to that ad hoc committee and make sure that it is talked to. And then, you know, those things that you would like the ad hoc committee not to miss in this exercise. Thank you, honorable members, on that score. And like as I'm saying, is that when that report comes out of that ad hoc committee, and then there is anything that we feel that you may still need to do some further work in relation to this, we can always make a provision on our fourth program, and then still do it. Can we now look at the program that we have in front of us, the SNAP program? Honorable Nancy?
I'm trying to reason exactly what are we saying at the conclusion now. I wanted to hear properly. We are saying, as the Honorable Kumete was saying, we are saying the terms of reference that we were undertaking for that trip of the 23rd will have also to be referred to them so that they can cover what we wanted to cover. That's what we are saying.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
All right.
We are discontinuing that exercise, then we are actually donating that exercise to the Ad Hoc Committee.
All right.
And then we are asking them to make sure that the Secretariat make sure that that is part of their overall program, that that leg is also done. Of course, like as I've indicated, that even if we don't ask them to do so, they can't avoid doing that exercise because that is almost one of the core areas that brings all these things about, the issues of undocumented people and all that, and what has led to that. And then they can't avoid inquiring on that. Agreed?
Yes.
Yes, the program in front of us, one, we have agreed, I think, in terms so let me just simply say that this program is extracted out of the business plan or whatever is called the strategic plan. Okay. And then in the previous previous parliament, then Northern Cape was not visited by the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs. That's why we have now prioritized to visit the Northern Cape. And then what we are saying with the Northern Cape is that when you look down, there are days where we are going to interact with the provincial managers of Home Affairs on service delivery. And then with Northern Cape, we are going to do that when we visit them there in their own province. When we do the visit, then we'll have a session with them, and then they will then be interrogated on their service delivery. And then when we come now and call other provincial managers to come to Parliament, Northern Cape won't be called in. Okay? So that is Northern Cape. I'm sure honorable members will remember that one day we saw some map where there are centers for IDs and all that, and Northern Cape that we could not see. They were far away, and then we said that the people in Northern Cape, they are made to pay a lot of money to access the Home Affairs office. We don't have a lot of offices scattered through the whole province in Northern Cape. They are far, far from each other. Now we must go and actually experience it ourselves, and then so that we are able to inform the decisions of the department. And then the second item on the 28th of July 2015. Is that? Okay. I just missed that other leg as well. We have just simply provided as well the possibility of us having a committee meeting there and to fill in the vacant position in the IEC. We have put in this one because what is happening, we expect the Chief Justice to do the interviews on the 15th of this month, which is next week, Monday. And then we hope that when he has finished doing that, those interviews, he may not take a lot of time to finalize his report and make the recommendations to Parliament. If it does happen before the end of June, then we should be able to meet as the committee there and complete that exercise. And then we will definitely request all members of this committee to be there in Northern Cape visit. And then if they, for some reason, one member is not able to take the whole oversight trip, we will be able to set, after we've received the report from the Chief Justice, we should be able to put a date exactly, so that whoever is not able to go with us for the whole oversight period can come only on that day into Northern Cape, Kimberley. We have the committee meeting, deal with that exercise, and then that member can also leave back home. I think we'll try to make sure that there is a smooth arrangement for that. And Then on the 28th, then 28th of July, we hope that by this time the advent as well, or the input from public will have closed and would have received them, and then we should be able to finalize this amendment bill. Debate it on the 28th of July. Then it is on the 4th. On the 4th, and then we will be talking to the adoption. We'll be talking to us at the adoption of these rules. After we have argued inputs, everything on the 28th of July, then we have got a week. And then we should be coming then to say done on the 4th of August. And then in that month of August, then it should find its way to the NCOP and for concurrence. And then we hope that by the end of August, then this bill should have been dealt with in Parliament, and then give the President at least 3 weeks to look at the bill, you know, we're trying to finish it a little bit early so that the President is not under pressure, that the bill lands on his table just a day or two before the 20th of September. It won't be in order. So we'll be trying to get a little bit early so that it is there, apply his mind before he puts his signature on the bill, and to ensure that on the 27th it is effective. Okay. And then on the 18th, of course, then we will be receiving the third and the fourth quarter performance of the department. I'm sure honorable members will realize that the department has not come to give us their third quarter performance because we have not called them to do so. There have been many things that we have been calling them to come and brief us here. And then for some reason then the third quarter they have not been called in to come, and then on that day then we'll be receiving both, and then on the 25th then you will remember that in terms of the National Development Plan, and then the Department of Home Affairs is expected to assist in acquiring critical skills facilitating through the permits, or whatever call them, the visas. And then we would then expect to receive a report on how the department has performed on that particular matter in facilitating acquisitions of critical skills into the country for economic development. And then also, of course, it's from the Engineering Council of South Africa, because some of the critical skills like the engineers, then there is an element that the Engineering Council has to do in terms of either verifications of qualifications or whatever, whether those specific persons claiming to be engineers, whether their qualifications make them engineers correctly. I'm sure, I just hope that all of us, we know the Engineering Council. It is a statutory body that authority in the engineering sector that seeks to ensure that all South Africans are protected from constructions that are made by engineers, that every time those engineers that are actually operating in the built environment do design and supervise constructions of infrastructure that is safe for South Africans. And then also just to hear from them what are their experiences with the kind of people that may have been forwarded to them for verification of their qualification, or kind of people, critical skills that may have come in. into South Africa. I know that sometimes you may also be talking to IT skills, but currently, of course, in majority, it's almost in the engineering sector in terms of our infrastructure build program, which is in billions. In September, then we will have briefings from provincial managers of Gauteng, Limpopo, and Free State, and Northwest on service delivery and their human resource management from their own provinces. The same is on the 8th, the following week. It will be from Mpumalanga, Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, and Western Cape. And then on the 15th of September, then we have got the first court performance of the department and the human resources management and training. That will be finishing our third term program. Honorable member. You remember that you had one item that you wanted us to debate about in terms of the legal costs of the department and the rest. There are the third quarter, fourth quarter, and the first quarter performance. Then you can sharpen your pencil and sharpen your mind, and then and make sure that the department comes and they give you adequate responses. During those specific engagements. Is there any other input that honorable members want to make? If there is any other item that comes as an emergency, whatever, we'll always try and provide an opportunity. And then sometimes we can always attach to one of these particular programmatic items that we have here. If it is not an issue that's going to take long. Like as I'm saying, is that the report of the ad hoc committee, we may find ourselves having to look at sections that affect home affairs, and so we may, after looking at that report when it is out, and then we may decide where we slot it in or whether we take it to the fourth term, and then we can always take those decisions. Is this program reflecting more or less what we're supposed to do in terms of our strategic plan? We have not deviated from the strategic plan in principle. It's an aircraft from the strategic plan which we have agreed and adopted ourselves. Can I see any show of hands to support the program or to make an input, if ever there's any input? Otherwise, it should be a move of an agreement on it. Because this is now going to inform the Z list. Are we together, honorable members? We can't be quiet. Somebody must raise their hand and say, no, we agree with this program. Like as I've said, as I'm trying to say to yourself, that if there is any other agency, we'll always talk to it and then find a way where we can feed it in. Honorable Master? You are moving that we agree with the program. Honorable Nisi, you also support. Okay. Right. Then that is dealt with, agreed. And then the last thing is the 2 sets of minutes. Minutes of the 19th of May. Page 1. Is there anything to be corrected, Honorable Fitlan?
Yes, Chairperson, I just want to argue that absent. I've sent my apology that I'm going to join you later, but as I came here, then the meeting was already adjourned. So my mistake was not to go to the secretary of Nandipa to say I'm here. So I think that after must be removed, Chairperson. Maybe you can.
Honorable Fichland, and then if you go to section 2 of the minutes, you'll see what you have said. But then it did not perform. Are we in agreement, Honorable Fichland? Now you can see that you are covered.
No, Chair, I'm not covered yet. Because there on the apology.
You want us to shift you to the top?
Yes, it must be in front here.
But you did not apologize for the meeting. You only give us an indication that you'll arrive late. That's not necessarily an apology. You just indicate to us that I will arrive late. Then it did not arrive.
I made means to make an apology. And I came, but it was too late. The meeting was so that's an apology, Chair.
Honorable members, okay, shift the name to the top. And but the fact of the matter is that I think we must just agree that he has not apologized for the meeting, that he's not going to be in the meeting. He said, I'll be in the meeting, but I'll arrive late, and then he was totally not in the meeting. That is what makes it to be absent, actually. Even technically, that's what Mubaz makes absent. Okay, for now, let's move into the apologies. But I'm sure in the future, if that is known, then it should be said so. And then if you apologize, from the meeting, it must say so. And then, is there any other thing that we must correct on the front page? None. And then on the second page? Nothing. Page 3? None. And then on page 4? The only two decisions. I'm not sure why the second one, 5.2, it was written in bold, 5.1 is not in bold. Is that any emphasis or just a mistake? Okay. All right. Anyone to move for the adoption of the minutes if there are with that specific correction of Honorable Fichland? The Honorable Maxen is moving for the adoption, and then Honorable Kenya is seconding. I thought that it was going to be Honorable Fichland that moves after we have made him happy. on his behalf. Yes, and then can we go to the minutes of the 26th of May, 2015? The first page. This is the one meeting that I was not in. But at least I've been put correctly. And apologies. Yes, and then at the top, I think we must indicate that the Honorable Gumede was an acting chair. Just indicate that. Otherwise, then this particular meeting was chairless. Okay? In brackets, then before the word ANC, then we put in acting chair. And then other than that input, what else? Page 2? Honorable Kenya? Any other correction on page 2? None. And then on page 3? None. And then on page 4? Charge the secretariat just to ensure that where there are figures, numbers, must just verify before I sign this minutes that those numbers are 100% correct, taken exactly out of the presentations as presented on that day. Any other, then on page 5?
Appealing to ourselves, Chairperson, that
let's not just leave that matter. If possible, let's map out a way forward so that we try and address the matter. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, thank you very much. And I really did not want to talk to this particular issue because it is a little bit hot, honorable members. I think that there are a few things that are facts that we need to be clear about. One is that Home Affairs now is expected to play its role as a security, as part of the security class. Number two, we need to, of course, cap possibility of child trafficking. Three, the introduction of this immigration regulation will definitely have an impact. Nobody should mislead anybody. It will have an impact because those that are used to trafficking children now, they will find it difficult to do so, and they will cry. Of course, an unintended consequence is that those that they've already booked, that were already flying across across in countries when the 1st of June arrived, and then they will have an impact. What one is actually saying is that whenever you change a status quo, certain people that enjoy the status quo then will feel the pinch. But the question is, will they be able to recover again? And then, because otherwise then, like as it was explained, that in 1994, we opened all the gates wide open. Everybody was coming in at ease. Now we have realized that even mosquitoes are coming in. Then we now close the doors halfway and say only those people that are qualified to come in must come in. Then those that were coming in that were not qualified to come in, they won't come in. Then they'll cry, of course. And then the other issue that we should realize as well is that there has been a lot of cry from the tour operators. We must understand, from the tour operators, not from ordinary parents and children, because this regulation, it says to a parent, when you want to travel with your child, then you must get an unabridged birth certificate. Then come a business person decide and say, no. Now, this is going to affect tourism and whatever. And in principle, when you go deep, they are saying that it's going to affect their businesses. That's all what they are saying. Because surely parents, if they know that they must carry a passport when they go to America, they will get a passport and go. Like what the DGS indicated when he was responding to it. If you have to travel to Tanzania or Nigeria or whatever, where they need a yellow fever certificate, you'll go around and find a clinic that issues that, and then you make sure that you have it, and then you go with that thing. You don't stand up and say, no, this yellow fever thing will affect tourism and blah, blah, blah. You don't say so. Because the introduction of that particular yellow fever certificate, it is meant to protect certain things, certain people against certain things. So, the issue of tourism in that particular country now has to be balanced with that particular protection that needs to be provided for the citizen. Otherwise, if they just simply close it up, then everybody goes there and then brings all the fevers, or when they are there, they get the fevers and bring them back home. And then that would not show the state that is actually worried about its citizens. So even ourselves, we are saying, yes, we want everybody to bring children and then tourists to come to the country, but there is this element of security that must not be forgotten. That's what we are saying. And then now, that element, for us now to ensure that that element is dealt with, it will have some impact on the number of people that were coming, because the figures that we're talking about, that the tour operators have been talking about, in the past have been inclusive even for trafficked children. I can tell all of you that on that day when I was not present in the meeting, the figures that have been provided to yourself on children that came to South Africa, the number of children that came to South Africa is more than the number of children that moved from South Africa outward. Which means we continue to have a balance of children that travel to South Africa, but they don't travel out. They come once and then they don't go out. If you look at those numbers, those that were traveling out of the country is less than those that were traveling in. And now somebody must explain what is happening in there. What is that that's happening? And again, the department has on many occasions indicated that it can't tell the world how many undocumented foreign nationals in the country. We can't tell the world. We don't know the number, because they just come through the fence inside the country. You don't know them. You have not taken biometrics. You just simply don't know them. Those that we know are those that said we are visitors into South Africa. Then they go through the process of being visitors. And while they are in the country, their permits, their visas expired, and then they just decided to stay in the country, overstaying their visitors' permits. Those are the ones that we know, that you know. There is so many people that came as visitors in the country, but they have not gone back home, and their visas have expired. Those are the ones that we know, because they were documented when they came in. Now we are saying, no, people that are flying in here, then it must have biometrics, that is, we must know them. And then, of course, that those that don't want to be known, they won't travel into South Africa, because they've got their own reasons why they don't want to be known. And then the tour operators will lose business on those ones, because they are protecting the press by not actually being transparent that they want to be known to come to the country. And then the question is, if you want now to say you don't want to impact on tourism, that means you must open even those and they must just come in. You see? And then the other fact that I just want to indicate is that, yes, I'm aware that there was an announcement at the forum here at the ICC last week, that the Minister and the President has indicated that there is a review of the Refugees Act, that the executive is actually looking at. And of course we know that the department said that they are actually coming up with a new policy on the refugees. It's still coming. And probably that these experiences may will influence the things moving forward. And of course that I'm aware today as well that the acting CEO of SAA has acknowledged the intention of this immigration regulations, although also he has noted that it has impact on tourism, but also he has noted the intention to deal with the child trafficking in our in front of us. So it all depends on patriotic South Africans, whether we want to render the country unsafe, or whether we want to actually try and maintain safety and security of citizens and even those that are visiting us legally, that they are safe when they are in the country. It is all in our hands as politicians here to take those kind of decisions. But the executive has actually moved forward and indicates that we must ensure security of our citizens. And because now we know this particular factor of children child trafficking, then it must be dealt with. And then one thing that as we move forward, that people that are coming from other countries into South Africa, they will find ways and adjust on this particular requirement. And the department also, I'm sure, it announced in that particular meeting, it announced the interim arrangements where there are certain things that certain persons cannot get an unabridged certificate. I think they have to approach the office, and then the DG then can write a letter to actually authorize that particular child to go with that particular parent on presentation of certain information. And so there are interim arrangements for unexpected occurrences when people want to travel with their children. And but also I think is we must acknowledge, we must take note, honorable members, the high mobilization against these immigration regulations. There has been a high mobilization out there to really really create a demon out of these regulations. And we shouldn't be amazed on some of the things that are happening, but let's hope that as we move forward and the regulations are implemented, whatever unintended consequences that may arise, if they are significant, and then the executive authority then will actually attempt to deal with that. And then also Parliament will, like as we're saying, is in the next, when we go to the third quarter, whatever, performance, then we'll be asking them on progress on this immigration revolution. And then we'll be briefed, and then we'll take corrective decisions if need be. Thank you very much, and then that brings us to the end of this particular. Oh, just a second, Honorable Strickland.
Take on this draft program.
Yeah.
It says from 23rd to the 23rd, but the last day is the 15th.
Can, are you aware of this?
Yeah.
What is that? Yeah. Yes. Okay. I think they are aware. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned. Go well, go well.